Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by our Director of Religious Education, Karen Lapidus, our Worship Associate, Mary Lou Holly, and our Music Director, Hal Walker.
Please join me in saying the words to the chalice lighting that we use every time we have multi-generational worship. We light this chalice because we are Unitarian Universalists. This is the church of the open mind. This is the church of the helping hands. This is the church of the loving heart.
Starting here, what do you want to remember? How sunlight creeps along a shining floor? What scent of old wood hovers? What softened sound from outside fills the air? Will you ever bring a better gift for the world than the breathing respect that you carry wherever you go right now? Are you waiting for time to show you some better thoughts? When you turn around, starting here, lift this new glimpse you found. Carry into evening all that you want from this day. This interval that you spent reading or hearing this, keep it for life. What can anyone give you greater than now, starting here, right in this room, when you turn around?
We invite you to explore with us as we consider an important chapter in our religious history. We're going to tell you two stories about two communities. One of them is called Hopedale, and the other, Brook Farm. And we're going to invite you to learn about the vision of these communities and consider the ways in which their vision still shapes the vision of Unitarian Universalists today. So to tell you these stories, we've invited two special guests to be with us, the founders of these utopian communities. And we're so glad to have the founder of Brook Farm, the Reverend George Ripley, with us this morning. Welcome, Reverend Ripley. It's so good to have you with us.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Please use the microphone so that everyone can hear you. Before you got the idea for Brook Farm, you were a Unitarian minister in Boston. Could you tell us why you decided to leave your ministry to start a commune?
I believed that the purpose of Christianity is to redeem society as well as the individual from sin. The life of my time was filled with many social sins which weighed heavily on my conscience, including slavery, unequal access to education, and widespread economic oppression. My wife, Sophia Willard Dana Ripley, shared these concerns with me, and together we were very involved in trying to find ways to make society more cooperative and less competitive. In 1840, I attended the Christian Union Convention with my friend, the Reverend Theodore Parker, and the conference attracted people who shared similar concerns, and there I met several others who were thinking about starting utopian communities, including Aidan Ballou, whom I understand you will be meeting later this morning. I left the conference filled with a vision which led to the creation of Brook Farm.
I see. So your vision for creating Brook Farm was really about finding a way that people could work together to create a community in which all would be treated equally and valued equally, no matter the color of their skin or how much education or money they had. Is that right?
That is right. But my vision was even larger than that. I thought I said it best in a letter I wrote to my friend, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Our vision, I told him, is to ensure a more natural union between intellectual and manual labor than now exists, to combine the thinker and the worker, to to guarantee the highest mental freedom by providing all with labor adapted to their tastes and talents, to do away with the necessity of menial services by opening the benefits of education and the profits of labor to all, and thus to prepare a society of liberal, intelligent, and cultivated persons whose relations with each other would permit a more simple and wholesome life that can be led amidst the pressure of our competitive institutions.
I see. So in addition to fairness for all people, you wanted to create a community where every person would be encouraged to use their bodies and their minds so that they could all live together in simplicity and harmony.
Exactly. That is why life on our farm was structured so that each person could choose the work they wanted to do. If you enjoyed milking cows, you could sign up to milk the cows. If you enjoyed teaching, you could be a teacher in our school. We wanted everyone in our community to have work that suited their talents and their interests. At the same time, we understood that someone needed to do the hard, boring work. We took turns doing the jobs that nobody liked. Variety was an important part of our work plan. And we tried to find ways to make the boring work less boring. For example, my wife, Sophia, had reading stands attached to the ironing board so that people could read while they ironed.
So creative. You mentioned your school. Could you tell us what that was like?
Our school was the shining success of our center at Brook Farm. The teachers in our school were passionate, intelligent, creative people, and we quickly earned a reputation as one of the best boarding schools in all of New England.
Huh. Since the school at Brook Farm was a boarding school, that means that the children lived on the farm. Did they have to help with the chores in addition to going to school?
Yes. We believed in wholesome living, in the cultivation of the mind and the body. Everyone who was able was expected to work 10 hours per day in the summertime and 8 hours per day in the winter. Part of the students' work involved attending to their studies, but they also participated in the chores on the farm. However, we paid the children for their chores just like we paid everybody else. Furthermore, we paid everyone the exact same amount, no matter which work they were doing. A child milking a cow was paid the same hourly rate as the teachers in the school. This fairness was part of our vision of valuing work equally. But it wasn't just work we valued. We also valued the development of the whole person. That is why we encouraged people to pursue spiritual, intellectual, and cultural activities in their free time. We regularly held musical events, poetry evenings, game nights, dancing, and parties in the evenings.
Brook Farm sounds like a wonderful place to live. I understand that a lot of people thought so because after you had only been open for 1 year, you already had 70 people move onto the farm. Why then did the commune only last for 6 years?
Well, there are several factors which contributed to our short life as a community. In the beginning, we had a shortage of skilled craftspeople living on the farm, which made it difficult for us to sustain ourselves. We had lots of novelists and ministers, but not many shoemakers or experienced farmers. In order to remedy this problem, we reorganized ourselves after the first 2 years to be more in line with the kind of communes advocated by a French social theorist named Charles Fourier. Fourier's vision was more industrial than agricultural, and it was also more formal in its organization. Soon after we reorganized, we began attracting more skilled and semi-skilled craftspeople who were followers of Fourier. We bought a steam engine to replace our horse mills, and we also started a new magazine. It seemed things were starting to look up for us, but then one of the students in the school was exposed to smallpox. Before we realized it, the student had exposed one-third of the Brook Farm community. At the time, smallpox was a highly contagious and very serious illness. We had no choice but to quarantine those people in order to stop the spread of the disease.
When people are quarantined, they aren't supposed to come into contact with other people who haven't already been exposed to the disease. Does that mean that some of the teachers and the students couldn't go to school?
That is right. But the impact of the quarantine was even worse. Many parents whose children hadn't been exposed were worried that they would get sick, so they began withdrawing their students from our school. Our school was the center of our financial health, so its closing put a strain on the community. We were worried about money, and the worry started causing conflict. I rallied the community and persuaded them that we needed to build a central community house so that we could finish aligning ourselves with the vision of Fourier. The people agreed, and we set to work building a huge building, which was going to be our new community center. Things were going well, and we were nearly finished with the construction when We decided to have a big party to celebrate. While we were at the party, the new building caught fire and burned to the ground.
Oh, that's terrible.
We were devastated by the loss.
Well, I trust that you were, but why didn't you just try to build again?
We didn't have enough money. In fact, when I look back, I realize that we never had enough money. Many of the people who initially bought shares in Brook Farm never paid for those shares, and we weren't really strict with getting people to pay what they owed, which meant we often needed to borrow money to cover our expenses. We were already deeply in debt by the time our new community center burned down. There was just no way for us to financially recover. I had to sell several hundred books in my personal library just to pay the bills, and even then had to declare bankruptcy.
What did you do after Brook Farm ended?
I decided to become a journalist. I got an entry-level job at the New York Tribune and eventually worked my way up. Though I never did live on a commune again, I remained very involved in the social and literary life of my time.
Well, thank you so much, Reverend George Ripley, for sharing your story and your vision for Brook Farm with us. And now I have a question for you. If you were going to start a utopian community to live the vision and the values that are the heart of your belief, of your life, what would that include?
Good morning, Mr. Ballou, and welcome to our church.
I'm glad to be here this morning with the members, friends, children, and the youth of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent.
We are looking forward to hearing the story of how you envisioned and created the Hopedale community that existed in Massachusetts from 1841 until 1856. Was creating this community a lifelong dream of yours?
It certainly was not. My life contained many twists and turns in both my professional life and in my beliefs. As a young boy, I wanted nothing more than to be a soldier. The colorful uniforms, the shiny swords and guns appealed to me. I longed for the excitement of battle. But when I was about 10 years old, maybe the age of some of the children of this church, I lost all my desire to be involved in war. Our new minister was preaching about how Jesus teaches us to respond to meanness and violence with love. This felt so right to me. I believed that we must act peacefully in order to create a peaceful world.
That sounds a lot like what our children and youth are learning here at this church. So what happened to you when you became a teenager?
Well, something wonderful happened. I had a strange and wonderful dream about my dear dead brother, Cyrus. He told me that I must become a minister and preach the gospel of Jesus. My family wanted me to be a farmer, but this wonderful dream was my call to the ministry.
Now, I know that you lived many years before the time when the Unitarians and the Universalist churches joined together as one. So were you a Unitarian or a Universalist minister?
At first, I was a Universalist minister. At that time, the Universalist Church had many differences of opinion about universal salvation. Some people thought that everyone goes right to heaven when they die. Others, like myself, believed that some people must serve a time of punishment before they can go to heaven. These controversies made it very difficult to serve as minister. For a while, I served as a Unitarian, served a Unitarian church. As their minister.
I know that just like in the present time, the Unitarians and the Universalists who lived in the mid-1800s were involved in the social issues of their day. What social issues were important to you?
I cared about temperance, which means I was against the use of alcohol. Slavery was still allowed in our country at that time, but I was an abolitionist, which means that I was against people owning slaves. The issue most close to my heart, though, was peaceful living. I came to believe very strongly that in order to make peace a reality, we must live in a deliberately peaceful way.
Was this the foundation of the Hopedale community?
It certainly was. I gathered my friends and family and shared my idea of creating a utopian community where we would live in peace and equality. People were excited about the possibility of living our values with each other every day, We pooled our money and bought some land in Massachusetts. We built houses and a large building that was a school during the week and a church on Sunday. We had a number of little factories, too. More than 40 people of all ages lived together in the Hopedale community. We raised all our own food and sold the goods we made in the factories to make money to meet our other needs. We called our lifestyle practical Christianity.
Were you the minister of the Hopedale community?
No, I was the teacher. Not only did I teach the children who lived there, but many children boarded there and went to school. Many of our students were the children of escaped slaves.
Did the Hopedale community have any rules or any guidelines?
We had a set of 24 principles that guided our lives. I'm aware that the 21st century Unitarian Universalists have 7 guiding principles.
That's right. I wonder if any of the Hopedale community's principles are like our Unitarian Universalist principles.
We held many traditional Christian beliefs about the nature of God and Jesus that may not be believed by some Unitarian Universalists today. But we are in agreement about the significance of justice building and peacemaking, about the desire to seek the truth, the equality of all people, and of course, the importance of love in all of our relationships.
The Hopedale community lasted for 15 years. What happened to bring about its demise?
Unfortunately, a number of factors came together to cause our community to disband. The most significant reason was financial. Some of our leaders decided to withdraw their assets. We never did quite settle the conflicts members had about communal ownership and individual ownership. This lack of common goals meant that we were unable to last very long. We struggled to live our own vision.
Did you and your family move from the Hopedale community after it ceased to exist?
No, I stayed in Milford, Massachusetts, and became the minister of the Unitarian Church there, where I served until I was a very old man. For the remainder of my life, I continued to speak and write about making a peaceful world.
Well, thank you, Reverend Aidan Ballou. Your story about the Hopedale community has me wondering, and perhaps many of you are wondering too. I'm wondering, what rules would you make if you lived in a community such as Hopedale?
Peaceful living, moral conduct, integrity, loyalty to the law of love. This was the vision of the people who chose to leave their private homes in order to live at Hopedale. Wholesome living, social equity, community sufficiency, intellectual, cultural, physical, and spiritual development in balance. That was the vision of the people who found themselves drawn to the community at Brook Farm. They were just two of the many, almost 160 utopian communities started in the middle part of the 19th century. Many of those were started by Unitarians, Universalists, Shakers, and Mormons. Distressed by the troubles of their time, they wanted to find a way to live lives that reflected their values. The communities gave them a place to practice what they might not be able to live on their own. The communities gave them a place to be accountable to their vision. Though none of the communities lasted for a terribly long time, the vision was not extinguished. Contemporary Unitarian Universalists are inheritors of the vision of the Unitarians and Universalists who started those utopian communities so many years ago. Life is different now than it was then, and we do not all agree with the ways in which the people who supported those communities tried to make their vision into their reality. But the core of their vision still shines bright in us. Like them, we too are trying to find ways to live lives of peace, integrity, and love. Like them, we too are striving to create a community of justice, equity, and wholeness in which everyone has enough. We read this congregation's vision earlier in our service. We used different words, but this is really what it's all about. We're trying to create more space so that we have the resources to invite more people to join us in our quest for beloved community, spiritual growth, and human and environmental justice. We can take a lesson from the ones who've gone before. The utopian communities at Hopedale and Brook Farm were short-lived experiments. They struggled not only with lack of financial resources, but also with a lack of leadership. The communities needed more money in support of their vision. That's true. But they also needed more people in the community to step up to leadership, to do the important work of organizing the resources that they did have, finding ways to use them flexibly and wisely, and inviting others to dedicate themselves to the vision. As we work together in this church to live together into our vision, may we let the past be our guide, even as we trust the promise of the future. Most of all, may we remember each and every day to celebrate the gifts and the possibilities that always exist in this very moment. Amen. I send you today with these words from the prophet Isaiah. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God? So may we go. Amen. Blessed be.